Welcome to the Renaissance Foundation podcast, a podcast about inspiration made by the young people at our youth charity. We support young carers, hospital patients, and at-risk pupils in London. I'm Corey, a member of staff at Renaissance Foundation, and I'm really excited to tell you about our special guest this week. We've got an award-winning athlete, broadcaster, and author. He's represented Great Britain at multiple Paralympic Games. He's won a BAFTA for his broadcast work and has also received an MBE for his contribution to disabled sport. We were lucky enough to speak to the amazing Adi Adepatan. Adi had a big talk with us that covered everything from his journey discovering wheelchair basketball to his determination overcoming all the setbacks on the way. And he also talks to us about how travelling taught him how important it is to be open-minded. This episode is full of genuine advice for young people. While being full of fun stories, we absolutely love talking to you, Adi. You taught so much and made us laugh while doing it. Thank you to everyone that made this episode possible. Sophie from Audible for arranging it. Tom for sharing his great podcast tips before we started. All the young people that took part, asked questions and enjoyed it. As well as the staff at RF and all of the listeners at home. Keep telling your friends and family about it and spread the inspiration. So let's jump in.
Thank you so much for coming, Adi, and giving us your time today to chat to us a little bit. We've just been having half an hour of just chats about podcasts, really, and also interview techniques and how to ask some good questions. It would be amazing if you could give a bit of an introduction on yourself to the young people on this call, and then they've put together some questions to ask you.
Okay, sure. My name's Adi Adepatan. I am a Paralympic athlete, TV presenter, travel journalist, and most recently a children's book author. I've written the Cyborg Cat series of books. Yeah, that's me. Currently at the moment, I've been working on a few documentaries. I've got a sort of documentary, sort of factual entertainment style documentary coming out on the BBC in the next couple of weeks, which I made with Sarah Cox. And that is about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the food chain and how it affected foods getting to our supermarkets from farms and suppliers and stuff. So, yeah, I'm a general media lovey and former sports athlete.
Thank you so much for that. So maybe we just could go around the room. I know there's some really great questions out there. So if anyone wants to jump in first, is there any takers for the first question?
I've got a question. What made you decide to get into wheelchair basketball?
When I was at primary school, and even when I started secondary school, my main passion was football. I've told this story quite a few times before, but it was just by total coincidence. I was being raced through the streets by my friends in a Tesco shopping trolley because it was the easiest way for me to get around. When I used to walk around on calipers, and when I walked on calipers, I couldn't quite keep up with my friends because calipers affected my mobility, which was part of my disability. And we decided that the best and fastest way for me to get around was for them to get a shopping trolley and for me to jump in that shopping trolley and race me around, which was quite funny, actually. It was a lot of fun. But I was spotted by some physiotherapists who were based in Canning Town, which is a couple of miles away from where I lived in Plaistow in East London. They'd set up a junior wheelchair basketball team. They'd heard stories about me. They knew I was going to one of the local schools, and they wanted me to join their basketball team. And they just so happened to be on their way home from dropping some kids off from a basketball match when they spotted me being raced through the streets in this shopping trolley. And they asked me, they pulled over. Me and my mates were a bit weirded out by this bus and these strange people pulling up beside us. And they asked me, they knew my name, which was also quite scary. I was like, how do these people know my name and who I am? Am I in trouble or something? And they asked me if I'd like to try out wheelchair basketball. And at the time, I'd never heard of wheelchair basketball. At the time, I didn't know it was possible for people in wheelchairs to play basketball. And I just thought these people were crazy. And I said, no. I said, you're having a laugh. And me and my friends left. But they, after making that contact, they went to my school, spoke to my teachers, spoke to my parents, and they eventually convinced me to go to Stoke Mandeville, where they were hosting the junior wheelchair basketball games in Aylesbury. And I went there. First of all, I was pretty much overwhelmed by seeing so many disabled people. I'd never seen so many people with disabilities because I went to an able-bodied school. Did suddenly then see people, amputees, people with cerebral palsy, spina bifida, and moving around in wheelchairs, on crutches, and all of that, just sort of threw me off. And I was like, what was going on here? But I also just so happened on that same weekend, the Great Britain wheelchair basketball team were training, the men's team were training. And that was the first time I saw disability sport at an elite level. And I was expecting it to be slow. I was expecting it to be boring. I was expecting to be quite cringy. But what I saw was probably the coolest sport I'd ever seen in my life. You know, these guys were in state-of-the-art wheelchairs. Their wheelchairs were funky colors. The wheels were angled out. They were doing wheelies, 360 turns. They were flying about. And one of the things, the perceptions that you have of disability is that it's going to be, everything's going to be slow paced. Or back then, that was the perception. Everything was going to be slow paced. Everything was going to be safe. But I suddenly saw a guy with no legs in a wheelchair hit a guy's wheelchair when he was defending him as he was moving fast, and fly out of his chair and tumble and start rolling across the floor, sparks flying everywhere. And I was like, whoa. And there was no fuss. This guy got back in his chair, fist bumped the other guy, and then they carried on playing. They were shooting three-point shots. They were shooting reverse layups. They had the biggest arms I'd ever seen. And immediately I looked at them guys and I was just so blown away and excited by, you know, the speed and the athleticism of the sport. And for the first time, I saw these guys and I thought, actually, you know, I don't see their disability. What I see here is just great, incredible athletes. And from that moment, I said, yeah, this is it. This is the sport for me.
Really cool story.
No worries, no worries. Have we got any more questions?
Would it help if we introduce some of us or ask?
Yeah, definitely. Tell me who's here.
Brilliant. So I'm happy to start. So I'm Sat, I'm the director at Renaissance Foundation, and we're an East London based charity. So when you're talking about plaster, we all got excited, to be honest.
Whereabouts in East London is the charity based?
So we're based in Shoreditch, but we've always been in like Tower Hamlets. And then our groups are mainly from sort of Hackney and Tower Hamlets and East, really.
It's my old manor. It's my old manor where I grew up. Okay, tell me who else is here. Who else have we got then?
Do you want to go next, Corey?
Hi, I'm Corey. I'm the media manager at Renaissance Foundation. I was born in Plasto in Newham General, so
yes!
Shout out for that. And I just wanted to say thanks so much for joining the call, because you've really inspired me growing up, and I want like to share the opportunity with the young people, because we're a youth charity that helps young carers and hospital patients. So a lot of what you're saying really relates to us, and especially the East London stuff. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, guys. This makes me, I feel even more excited to be part of this. Who else have we got?
Hi, I'm Rachel. Nice to meet you. Really, thank you for joining us today. It's incredible. We're all super excited. So I'm the program manager at the charity. Should I hand you over to Noosha?
Yes, cool.
Because you're next to me on the screen.
Yes, hi, I'm Noosha. I'm the research intern here at Renaissance Foundation. I'm really excited to hear your talk today.
Oh, great. And who else have we got?
Hey, I'm Imani. I'm also an intern here at RF, and yeah, super excited to have you on. Shall we go to Ose next?
Hi, I'm Ose. I'm 16. I'm from South London. I was going to say, like, I've actually always been obsessed with, like, the para sports. I found it so cool, especially when they came over to, like, London. So it's just really cool meeting you.
Oh, thank you. I'm really pleased to meet all of you guys. We got any more?
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Ziana. I'm 15, and I like singing.
Nice to meet you, Ziana.
Hi, my name is Jarrell. I am 14, and I like singing.
Nice to meet you, Jarrell.
I mean, I'm Joshua. I just remember watching Wiltshire basketball at, like, London 2012. Like, because I was at the stadium. It was amazing.
Oh, like, wicked.
Yeah, like, honestly, that's what got me obsessed with, like, Paralympics.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah, London 2012 was, I think it's probably one of the highlights of my career. I was a little bit sad that I didn't get to play in it, that I retired before London 2012. But to have been part of the whole event, to have been working with Channel 4 and to also have helped to bring those games to East London, for me was special, because I think that's the first time people in the UK really got a chance to see Paralympic sports up close and personal.
It really was. I mean, I'm based in Walthamstow, so East London as well.
Yes. I my basketball team, sometimes we train at the Walthamstow Feel Good Centre. Yeah, we sometimes train there on, well, we can't train there at the moment because of the situation, but on Mondays we have a session there. So if any of you guys ever want to pop down to see the London Titans training, once the lockdown is over and everything gets back to as close to normal as possible, pop down on a Monday and say hello to the team. 8 till 10.
Ooh.
Oh, thank you. That's really cool. It's not far from us at all. And I think I learned to swim in that swimming pool there. So when it was called Pool and Track. So I like the local connection there.
Yeah. No, even though I don't live in East London anymore, I'm still heavily connected with the area.
Chuck, do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Chuck Kwanwike, and I like animating.
Awesome. Chuck, good to meet you, Chuck.
Good to meet you too.
By the way, I'm just drinking my energy milkshake this morning. I need it. Boosting myself. Strawberries, mint, a bit of yogurt, and some milk. It's amazing. Right? Mint leaves. Chop the mint leaves up, put strawberries in it, some milk, and it gives you, and a little bit of yogurt, and it gives you that boost in the morning.
You know, I was going to ask you for some lockdown tips, but I think you've answered my question, because that sounds like such a good idea.
Yeah, I tell you, the secret ingredients is mint, fresh mint. Get the mint, wash it, the leaves, chop it up, right, and put them in with some fresh strawberries, chop them up, bit of milk, a bit of yogurt, blend it all together. Ah, it's amazing. Every day, if you start with that, you just feel great.
Sounds good. I'm going to try that.
Yes. Yeah, you could call it Addy's Blend. Addy's Special Recipe Blend.
We'll do. We'll put it on Instagram. We'll have to credit you as well. Addy's Breakfast Blend.
Yes, my breakfast blend. That's the one.
Does anyone have any questions that they want to start with? Any of the young leaders? Because you guys done really well introducing yourself. Would anyone like to ask a question?
So, like I said, I was also obsessed with the Paralympics, and I love the adverts. I made, like, a YouTube folder on all of them. So I just wanted to ask you, like, what did you think about the Paralympic advert?
The Paralympic advert? Back in London 2012?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the one which used the Public Enemy track with, and it was, like, real action-packed with the different sports and Paralympic athletes doing amazing things, yeah?
Any of them. I watched all of them. They're already amazing.
So, the advertising campaign that Channel 4 did, I think, was spot on. And I think it really played a huge part in, one, demystifying Paralympic sport. And what I mean by demystifying is the fact that not many people knew enough about the sport or the sports in general. They didn't understand the classification system, some of the rules. They didn't know about who the athletes were. And I think the Meet the Superhumans campaign, because that's what it was called, Meet the Superhumans, it definitely gave people that real introduction into Paralympic athletes. And the music, the way it was cut, the way it was put together, actually also changed people's perceptions, because it made Paralympics cool. I mean, I thought we've always been cool. I thought, disability sport has been cool from day dot. But actually, for this, it announced to the world that we are cool. This is what you've been missing. You know, these guys, these women, these men, they're incredible people who've overcome tough situations. But what you have to respect them for is their ability, what they're able to do. You know, they can run faster than most people. They can jump further than most people. They can swim faster. You know, they have the determination that most people would aspire to. And that was, for me, it was really special, because as a kid, you know, I when people looked at me, when they looked at someone with a disability, I think the first thing that came across in many people's minds are all the things you can't do. You know, they look at me and they see me in a chair and they think, oh, he can't walk. You know, they saw me when I was in on my calipers, and they thought, the guy's got a disability. But suddenly these adverts, this campaign started focusing on everything we can do. And that for me is the most important thing. You know, so now when people look at us, I mean, there's still a long way to go, but I definitely think now the way your generation, the younger generation, look at people with disabilities is completely different to the way my generation looked at people with disabilities. And I think it's thanks to that campaign, thanks to the Paralympics, and thanks to the way your generation have embraced it as well. Is that okay?
Yeah, that was a great answer.
No worries. I'm loving your hair, by the way. That's proper.
Thank you.
Styling it out. Have we got any more questions?
I've seen there's one from Sam, and he said, what's your biggest fear? Which I think is an amazing question and not one that's asked very often. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it crosses over with one of the questions you sent me. I'm just looking at it. It said, what's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome? So biggest fear, biggest challenge. I think possibly when making the transition from athlete to, what's the best way of putting it? Not civilian, but going from sports to TV was pretty scary for me, actually. I think for a lot of athletes and for a lot of people in general, when you change professions, when you change careers, it's a really scary moment. Any sort of change is scary for people. They now say, statistics now say that on average, most people over the course of their lives will change their careers, I think, 6 times. So we now have to become more adaptable and more malleable as people in the way we look at our lives and our careers. My generation's parents and their parents had tended to have jobs for life. You know, they would get into a job, I don't know, become an accountant, become a bus driver, and that would be their jobs for life. But now, because the way the world is, because it's changing, it's moving so much, what is needed for people, the skills that are needed today might be obsolete tomorrow. So we all have to become more used to change. And for me, I started off as an athlete, a Paralympic athlete, and my whole life was controlled. I got up every morning. I knew what I was doing. I knew how much I had to train. I knew what I had to eat. I knew for 4, 5, 6 years what I was doing every day of my life. And suddenly you stop and you have to try and, you know, conquer a new career. And it's scary. And I suppose the biggest fear I had not so much fear, but the biggest thing that I had to overcome is self-doubt. I think they call it imposter syndrome. You know, constantly thinking, am I worthy of what I'm doing? Am I good enough to do what I'm doing? And it's taken a long time within the TV, in my TV career, for me to become fully comfortable and confident in myself that I'm doing that what I'm doing is worthy and is good. You know, because I came in sort of from a sports background. A lot of the people, when I started working in children's TV, you know, I started working on a kids show called Exchange. Well, before that, actually, I did a show on Channel 5 called Tiger Tiger, which if you guys look back on YouTube, you might find and you might see clips of me with my little dreads doing this show called Tiger Tiger, where I traveled around the world. It was amazing, amazing show. It was about endangered animals. But anyway, when I started working for the BBC, which was a big step, and working on CBBC, I was working with people like Reggie Yates, Jake Humphreys, Holly Willoughby, all these people who are Fern Cotton, even Clara Amfo, all these people who are established TV presenters, even at that time, and their whole life, all they wanted to do is become TV presenters. So I came around these people and I was just like, whoa, you know, this is what they want to do. I'm just new to this. And I just constantly doubted myself. And I think my message, the way I overcame it, and it's a message to you guys, is to accept the challenge. Accept the challenge. Take it on. Don't be worried about making mistakes, you know. And sometimes in your life, you have to do things which scare you. You know, you have to do things where you're not quite sure what the outcome is going to be, but the rewards are amazing when you push yourself and you challenge yourself. You know, when I first did my first TV show, Tiger Tiger, when I finished it, I didn't really want to get into TV. I wanted to carry on playing basketball, but one of the directors that I worked with, he gave me a contact. He gave me a contact for an agent. And he said, you need to get yourself an agent. And I was like, nah, I didn't see many black people on TV. I didn't see any disabled people on TV. And one of my friends said to me, you won't get on TV because there's nobody who speaks like you on TV. Everyone who's on TV is really posh. You haven't got the right accent. You don't fit TV. So I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But he also put me in contact with a friend of his, a guy who was just up and coming in TV. And his name was Dermot O'Leary. And he said to me, meet Dermot O'Leary, right? He's just starting in TV, but he's got a really good agent. And I reckon you should meet him. I met Dermot. Dermot gave me his agent's number. And said, you know what, I think this would be great for you. My agent would love to meet you. I threw that number away. I tore it up and I threw it away because I didn't believe in myself, because I thought if I phone him up and I go and meet him and he sees me, the agent is going to laugh at me because of the way I look and everything. And I was so wrong. And luckily for me, Dermot's agent, who's still my agent now, called me up 4 months later, because he'd seen me on TV on this show, Tiger Tiger. He said he didn't even know I had a disability. He just saw me on the back of an elephant because I was doing this show about wildlife and I was trekking tigers in India. And he said he loved my personality. He loved the way I communicated. And he really wanted me to come in. And he said he wanted to represent me as an agent, and he wasn't going to represent me because of my disability, but he was going to represent me as a presenter who deserved to be on TV and who he felt could make a difference, you know, by being on TV. So I learned a valuable lesson there, and that was to believe in myself, you know, and to challenge myself and not to be afraid of going into the unknown. Sorry, I rambled on a bit there, but you know, I just thought I needed to get that story in so you guys would understand.
That was amazing. Thank you so much. What I really liked as well was it seems as though those overcoming challenges for you have been a constant springboard, which has allowed you to have that adaptability and flexibility to kind of be successful in like every challenge that you've let yourself be a part of. And it's really interesting to see that it's crossed over in so many areas. So now you're writing a book and you've just, it just seems like you've got that really inspirational approach to life, which means with the right attitude, you can kind of get through anything, which it's really, really inspirational.
I think challenges are what help us as the human race advance. You know, when we sit still, when we are scared to take risks, and I mean, I don't even see them as risks, but when we're scared to do things because we're worried about making mistakes or we're worried about looking silly, that's when we don't move forwards. And I've always had the attitude of, I don't want to be that guy who's sitting in a pub when I'm 40 or 50 years old saying, I could have been something. That could have been me. You know, I've always felt like I need to go out there and try it. And if I fall flat on my face, so be it. I'll learn from that mistake and move on. But I don't want to have that nagging doubt in my mind, wishing I tried because I liked art. I tried to be an artist, or because I wanted to be a musician and I was too scared to sing in front of people. Just like, just do it. And that's the thing I say to people. If you have a passion, if you have something that's burning inside of you that you really want to do, just go for it. Yeah. And but first of all, be prepared to be rubbish at it, because everyone who's ever been anything in their lives, who's ever been good or achieved anything, started from somewhere, and we were all rubbish at the beginning. Yeah, you know what I mean, but the exciting thing is knowing how good you can be if you work hard at it and you try and achieve your potential.
That was brilliant, thanks, Ade. I have a quick kind of follow up question to that. I'm Sophie from Audible. Hey,
hi, Sophie.
I wanted to just ask. Obviously, the career path that you've taken is perhaps not your typical career path, as you said. You know. Not a lawyer, doctor, etc., that your parents might have expected you to be. How did you cope with telling them that you wanted to do something a little bit different? And what challenges did you face with that? And have you managed to convince them that what you're doing is, although it might not be typical, it's exciting and you're happy with it?
that is a good question, because I guess... I'm not a parent myself, but I can imagine what it must have been like for my parents to bring someone up like me. I wasn't the easiest child, because my parents and a lot of people, as you alluded to there, Sophie, my parents wanted me to take on the typical profession. You know, I've done this a lot, but my dad would and my mum would say, Ade, you have to work hard, twice as hard as anybody in this country if you want to succeed. Wheelchair basketball will get you nowhere. You need to work and try to be a lawyer, a doctor, a surgeon, any of those professions. And when I said to my parents, I can't imagine what it must have been like for them to the moment I turned around and I said to them, I'm going to be a wheelchair basketball player and I'm going to be a star. They must have thought I'd truly lost my mind. But when I think back about it, I just can't believe how confident and how much self-belief I had, because back then no one knew about Paralympic sport. There was no platform to go anywhere with Paralympic sport. I had to really open up my own doors. You know, I had to forge my own path. There was no blueprint or role models for me to look at and say, oh, that person's done it before. This is what I have to do. So it was kind of a brave new world. And And now when I look back at it, I think it makes me sort of a little bit scared, because I think, wow, what if it hadn't happened? But yeah, it took a long time to convince my parents. I mean, it wasn't the best way of doing things, but I left home when I was 16. I was just coming up to 17. And what happened is, when I was 15, I was British junior powerlifting champion. I broke the British powerlifting record. I think I lifted double my weight. So I was pretty strong. I was very light, but I was really strong. And consequently, I got selected for the junior world championships in Miami. And they were around December. And at that point, I was due to sit my mock exams for my GCSEs. And I would have had to miss a bit of preparation, and I think the school would have allowed me, but I would have had to make up the time at another point. But my dad and my parents were like, no way. They were like, no way. You are not going to miss your exams for powerlifting. Powerlifting. Ha! And Miami, what do you need to do in Miami? Anyway, I was gutted. As a 15-year-old, I had the chance to represent Great Britain and go to Miami and compete at the powerlifting championships, but it wasn't going to happen. And in my mind, I don't know why my mind worked like this, but I suddenly decided that if I was going to achieve my dreams, I was going to have to do something drastic. And some friends of mine said to me, they said, yeah, if you're disabled, you can take your driving lessons at 16, and you can get a mobility allowance so you can get a car. And the physiotherapist who introduced me to wheelchair basketball, I mean, so supportive, amazing people, they bought me 10 driving lessons for my 16th birthday. So I took 10 driving lessons, passed my driving test, got my first car on the mobility allowance. And then one of my friends told me, because I said, I need to leave home. And they said to me, well, if you write a letter to the council, say your dad's kicked you out of your house, you'll get a flat. And so I did. And it took about 6-7 months, but I got a flat and I got a car and I moved out. I moved out when I was 16, just turning 17. I just went out and then completely focused on trying to become the best wheelchair basketball player that I could be. I don't recommend that to everybody. It was pretty drastic. At times it was quite lonely. It was really tough because I couldn't earn any money at first. I had to live on £38 a week for quite a long time. And it took me nearly 10 years to achieve my dream to get into the Paralympic squad. And when I finally did, the first time my parents saw me, because I stopped speaking, my dad didn't speak to me for almost 10 years. And the first time my dad and mum saw, well, my dad saw me again, was at the Sydney Paralympics at the opening ceremony. And when he saw me competing at the Paralympics in Sydney in the opening ceremony, he then suddenly realized, wow, this is my son's dream. This is what he wants to do. He's serious about it. My younger brother said to me when I left that my dad said, oh, he won't last a week. He'll be back in a week. And 10 years later, they see me in Australia. They didn't even know I was going. I competed for the Paralympic team. They didn't know I was going. They just saw me on the TV. My mum had my mobile number. She'd give me a mobile phone and she called me while I was pushing around the track of the Olympic stadium in Sydney wearing a GB vest. And I remember answering the phone and my mum saying, ha, you're in Australia. You're in the Olympic stadium. I can't see you on the TV. And I was like, yeah, mum, I'm competing for Great Britain. When I came back, I went to see my parents and my dad gave me a hug and he was crying and we all cried and made up. And yeah, that's, it took 10 years, but we got there in the end.
Wow, what a story. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's amazing.
That's all right.
I've got a question. How did you feel when you realized you were going to compete in the Sydney Olympics?
Wow. Can you imagine having a dream all of your life, seeing people living your dream on the TV, and seeing your friends as well getting selected to go to the Paralympics, and you not being selected, and them living your dream and telling you about that, and then thinking, you know, I'm just this kid from East London, from Plaistow, East London, and you know, thinking, how am I going to make this dream come true? And then for 10 years, you know, because it's, as I said, it took me the best part of 10 years to get into the national team. And I was cut from the squad, I think, 7 times. So to be told over that period of 10 years, around 7 times, maybe more, that you were not good enough to make it into this squad, to be told by your parents that you were bonkers to do what you were doing, you know, to have so many people doubting you, and then to finally make it, to finally get into the squad, it's really hard to put into words. You know, it actually makes me emotional when I think about it now. And that's why I always say to people, I know it's tough, you know, and I get frustrated with the world that we live in, because I feel that there is an inequality of opportunities. If you come from certain backgrounds, certain parts of the world, certain places in the UK, it's tougher, it's harder for you. And that's not fair, and that's not right. And my life now is a part of it, is dedicated to trying to balance out those inequalities. But I say, despite all of that, despite all of those inequalities, regardless of where you come from, you should still have a dream, and you should still chase that dream. You deserve, each and every one of us deserves to have a dream, and deserves to have that opportunity to make that dream come true. And on your way to trying to chase your dream, or say, I don't know what it is you want to achieve or what you want to do, there will be setbacks. You will have tough times. There will be people who will be doubting you. But you must believe in yourself. You must challenge yourself. And you've got to give yourself every opportunity to try and achieve that dream. It took me 10 years and I got it. And I had to overcome some really difficult situations and difficult circumstances. But I persevered and I got there. And I hope each and every one of you out there that I speak to, I can, you know, maybe pass on a little bit of that passion to go out there and chase your dreams. And just say to you, however tough it is, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you can be successful. You can make it.
I have a bit of a follow-up question after that. How did you quite mentally going through all of those challenges to try and become, trying to go into the Olympics?
So it's a very good question. I think the essence of what you're saying is, how do you cope with setbacks? How do you cope with, you know, failure and dealing with obstacles in order to get to where you want to get to? I think one of the really important things, well, a couple of important things, we've touched on it earlier. One, challenge yourself. Always challenge yourself. I think it has to be something that is part of who you are, and that you, if it doesn't come natural to you, then find a way. You know, every day, set yourself some sort of challenge. And it doesn't have to be massive. I'm not asking you to be the first person from East London to land on the moon. You know, I'm just saying, set yourself little challenges. Maybe learn another language. Maybe, you know, learn to play an instrument. Things that you can give yourself wins at that will give you confidence. All right, that is the first step. You know, the second step is not to be afraid of making mistakes. You know, not to be afraid of making mistakes along the way, because that's part and parcel of being successful, making mistakes. What's more important is that you learn from those mistakes. And I think finally, it's be in the moment. You have to be in the moment, because I think the big thing that holds a lot of people back is looking at the end product, the end goal. So what I mean by that is, for a long time in my career, I spent a lot of time thinking what it was going to be like to be a Paralympian, what it was going to be like to win a medal. And on top of that, what ended up happening is I started thinking of how bad I would feel if I failed, if I didn't succeed, if I didn't make it. And that distracted me from being in the moment. What I should have been thinking of is, what can I do every day to help me achieve my goal? What can I do today that will get me to where I want to be? Not what I need to be in 5, 6, 7 years' time. What can I be today? What can I be tomorrow? What can I do tomorrow? And what can I do the day after? So you have to focus day in, day out, and find something that is that you're passionate about, that just drives you, that makes you want to get up out of bed every morning to do it, that you would do if it's raining, if you're not feeling great, you will still do it because it makes you happy. That's the thing. I think you have to be in the moment, and you have to just think about something every day that you can do that will help you achieve your dreams.
That was a great answer. When this podcast comes out, I'm going to be taking notes on everything you just said.
Okay, no worries. Glad to be of help.
Thanks so much. Honestly, the answers have been amazing, hearing like you're sharing your resilience and a lot of challenges that you've overcome. And I just thought, something that's been in my head that I wanted to ask really quickly is that you've had the opportunity to travel a lot.
Yes.
Through representing Britain through sports as well as your documentaries. And I wonder, where's been somewhere that's really opened your mind and you've been really like your favorite place that you've been? And also, I remember seeing one documentary where you visited somewhere in Africa, and there's a lot of issues with the public transport and getting around and having to get like basically not having the infrastructure for disabled people transport. Is there anywhere you felt like, wow, I've been really lucky that I grew up in London?
Had
the opportunity.
No, it's a really good question, Corey. I get it all the time when I travel. And I think that's the importance of travel. That's the beauty of travel, is it expands your mind. Believe it or not, the first time I left East London was when I was, I think, 18 or 19. Up until 18, 19, I hadn't got on a plane. My parents brought me over from Nigeria when I was 3 years old. But after that, like, my whole life was based in Plaistow, going to Stratford. Now, actually, once me and my friends, when we had, because I could ride a bike, and me and my friends, we rode through the Greenwich Tunnel, the walkway bit, and we went over to South London. That was like an exotic adventure. We were like, wow, we're in South London. Damn, look at this. It's a new world. I felt like Christopher Columbus, you know, when we arrived in South London. There's people here on the other side of the water. Yeah, and that's what it was like up until 18. And then when I was 18, my basketball team went to Italy, and we went for a basketball tournament there. And that was amazing. And got on a plane, the whole experience of traveling, meeting different people, eating different food, experiencing different cultures. I was hooked. I was like, wow. I mean, like from Plaistow to Rome, this is different. This is different business from Barking Road to the Colosseum. I was nuts. I was completely discombobulated. So that moment, I think what I'm trying to draw from this is that the great thing about traveling is it expands your mind, right? It helps you see other people's lives. It helps you see a different way from your own. And I think it makes you a richer and more valuable person to everybody, to society. And I'm not talking about richer in terms of material wealth. I'm talking in terms of who you are mentally, who you are empathetically, in all of those sort of qualities that are not always measurable. It improves you in those ways. And it increases your resilience. But also on top of that, it helps you see just how fortunate we are, you know, because there's a lot of times you can get bogged down in this bubble where you think, oh, life is so tough. You know, it's really hard living here in East London. And then you go and travel to, like, you know, I've been to the Congo. You were talking about Mozambique, where the guy who I spent some time with was in a wheelchair. He couldn't get on buses, you know, none of the buses would allow him to go on because they just thought, well, you know, it's too inconvenient. It's too difficult to allow this guy. And also there's a massive stigma around having disability. They saw it as a curse, as bad luck. So in every which way, he was being held back. And when you see that, when you see the lack of opportunities that this guy has, when you see the lack of opportunities people who are able-bodied have, you know, the fact that in some of those countries that I went to, yeah, people spend more of their time walking to go and get fresh water than they do to do anything else. They spend 4 or 5 hours, you know, just walking miles to collect water so they can feed their family, wash their family. Yeah, whilst we can sit at home, we can turn on a tap. You get clean water whenever you want. The biggest thing that most people are worried about is if their Wi-Fi goes down. Damn, my Wi-Fi's not working. Life is over. It's so hard for me. Oh. Yeah, and I think it gives you perspective when you travel. And a lot of those people with disabilities, they couldn't even afford wheelchairs. You know, when I was in Nigeria, these guys were going about on pieces of wood with wheels on the bottom, and they wore flip-flops on their hands, and they were rolling around. And I looked at that and I thought, if my parents hadn't made that sacrifice, hadn't used all of their savings, and hadn't made the sacrifice to leave their friends, their family in Nigeria to bring me to the UK, that could have been me. That could have been me. And so, yeah, traveling has given me so much appreciation of the world we live in. In terms of my favorite place, people often ask me that. It's so hard. It's hard to pinpoint because every time you go to a new place, you think, oh my days, this place is amazing. This place is incredible. I'm currently, before the coronavirus pandemic hit the world, I was in the middle of making a documentary about climate change, which is something that I'm really passionate about. And I went to Australia, Solomon Islands, Bangladesh and Bhutan. We had 2 countries left to do and we had to stop because of lockdown, which was USA. And so I was going to go to Alaska and I was also going to go to China. But for obvious reasons, we couldn't go to those places. But actually, on this trip for the climate change documentary, I was really surprised by Bangladesh. Bangladesh is just stunning. We went to a part of Bangladesh called the Sundarbans, which is this rainforest that is just so beautiful, teeming with wildlife, these beautiful waterways. It's about 10,000 kilometers long, goes from Bangladesh into India. And it also provides this natural barrier and protection for that region of the world and protects them from storms, from hurricanes and stuff. And it's such a beautiful natural resource. And the people in Bangladesh were incredible. And the food was amazing. So I'd say Bangladesh is on my list as an amazing place. Bhutan was incredible. And also the Congo, DRC. When I was out in doing my trip for Africa, DRC was just, yeah, that's amazing. All I say to you is once this lockdown ends, hopefully we get to some sort of normal, try and travel. I think the way we travel is going to change, where we may not be able to fly as much as we can, but, you know, take boats, you know, drive an electric car, you know, try and do it as responsibly as possible, but expand your mind, broaden your horizons, try new food, learn different language. I mean, I'm starting to try and learn Swahili. Swahili is such a beautiful language. You know, that's on my list. I can speak Spanish. I can speak a little bit of Yoruba. I'm not bad with the old English. And so Swahili's next for me. Yeah, that would be cool.
Oh, thank you so much. That was like such a jam-packed, brilliant answer. Yes. The fact you talk about leaving your area of London, even I remember it wasn't until my late teens that like leaving the M25 felt like exotic, exactly what you were saying.
Yeah. And there's so many people who are like that. It's not just London. It'll be all over the UK who only stay in their area. And I just don't. I think we got to leave that fear. It's nothing wrong with staying in one place, but I think to expand your mind and to really have a knowledge of the world, and to understand what is going on in our planet, and to have that empathy, you have to travel. You have to travel. You know, we're at the moment you see it a lot in the press and in the media. There seems to be a little bit of a north-south divide in the UK, and it's become a them and us. And I think that wouldn't happen so much if we travelled more, even within our own country. If we us Londoners went and spent time in Durham, in Liverpool, if those people from Glasgow or Carlisle came and spent time down south, and we all mixed and just understood each other's experiences, then I think the turmoil that we've had in this country over the last 5 years wouldn't have been it wouldn't have been so difficult to deal with, because we would have had more understanding. Completely. Sorry, I'm getting all political there.
No, I really appreciate it, because it fits with your answer, what you're saying. What I really appreciate about your work is just shining a light on that growing awareness. I think if we are able to see these and experience these different issues, we're more aware of them. And I think what I found quite interesting about your work when you said that you're in Mozambique and seeing that situation, it just was really eye-opening, and then makes you really lucky and fortunate to be here. But I also say I want to look forward to I thought that was a good name for a book, Plasto to Rome. So if you do make that book, please let me know. I want to buy it. I'll direct the set. I'll buy him 10 copies. You'd love that.
It's funny, because my Cyborg Cat series of books, the children's books that I'm doing, that I've written, are about a little bit about my journey from Lagos to London. And I was at one stage thinking of calling it From Lagos to London, but I ended up calling it the Cyborg Cat series and stuff. But a lot of people have been asking me to do travel books. They've been saying, write about your adventures traveling around the world. And I've never really thought about it. But it started to become something that I'm thinking about more and more, maybe that I should do. And you're right, that could be a good title, From Plasto to Rome.
Well, definitely. And don't forget Barking Road to Colosseum.
Yeah, I say some mad things sometimes. I don't even know where they come from, trust me.
No, I really appreciate it. This has been such a good fun, like, honestly. And you've been cracking us up. We just have to be on mute, because I'd be laughing too much. You wouldn't be able to hear anything. Has anyone else got a question that I'd like to ask?
You know what? There's a couple of questions on here. Yeah. Which I thought was quite cool. I saw is one of them was, were what is the best advice that you've been given? And another one was what soft skills do you think you enabled you to get your success, and why? I mean, those are pretty good questions, actually. In terms of advice, the best advice I think I was ever given was stay open-minded. Stay open-minded and learn from everything around you. I think sometimes we get the tendency to look down on things. And I think the first time I learned this was when I was in early on in my basketball career. One of my heroes, a guy who I played basketball with, was a guy called Steve Kane. Played wheelchair basketball. He's from up in Leeds. He lives in France now, actually. But Steve, we were watching this basketball match, and there was a French guy playing, and his name, a wheelchair basketball game, and his name was Alain Treslong. And he was a really interesting player. And all the other players in the GB team and in the GB setup said, don't look at Alain Treslong, right? He's not a good player to look at. He's so one-sided, right? He only uses his left hand. He only uses his left hand, right? You need to be looking at players who use both hands and stuff. And Steve said to me, yeah, that's true. He only uses his left hand, right? And he should improve his right hand. But he said, watch what he does with his left hand. Appreciate how good he is with his left hand, right? And absorb that. And what the lesson that taught me is that sometimes there are people and there are things that you look at that everyone discredits and everyone says, you know, that there's no value in that. But there is an opportunity for us to learn lessons from absolutely everything out there. So for me, my message to you is to stay open-minded. Open-minded all the time. Give everything a chance. Yeah, and you know, once you've tried it and if it doesn't work, then move on, try something else. But don't inhibit yourself by not trying something just because of someone else's opinion. And the other one, in terms of soft skills, I think the greatest soft skill that I've learned, and this is a secret weapon for us who come from, I'm trying to think of the best way of putting it, lower class backgrounds, who come from the street, and it's communication. I feel that I have learned and I've had to learn to communicate with people from every walk of society. To be able to communicate with people who are in the upper classes, who are people who are in the business classes, people who are on the street. And I didn't even know this. This is something that I learned from other people observing me. But they said to me, wow, you know, you when you're on TV, you know, I can still tell you're Addy, but yeah, you can communicate in a certain way. But then when you do a corporate job and you're speaking to bankers, then I see you communicate to them and get the message across in that way. And then they said, but then when you're back in East London, you're like on the streets and you're speaking to your friends in this way and you're getting the same message across. And I think it's something that we have. We can speak and we can communicate to everybody. And it's a skill that is undervalued, you know, communication. Because the more people that you can speak to, the more lessons you can learn and the more things you can absorb.
Wow, that's an incredible piece of advice. And I think that really applies to our young people at Renaissance Foundation. They're all excellent at communicating. I think it's really important that you said that. Thank you.
Communication is the number one skill. Trust me, as an athlete, as a TV presenter, in every career that I've done, the times that I've ever been held back or I've ever seen someone being held back is when you struggle to communicate. So if you can communicate, if you can get your message across to anybody, the world's your oyster. Trust me, you will succeed in life.
In fact, I'm going to remember that because that is actually really good advice. I'm taking that as well. Honestly, thank you so much, Addy. I think we're going to have to wrap up, yeah. Not because that's we want to cool. go. I want to talk to you way longer, but I think it's going to just go on too much if I just start. We just keep asking. So I just want to say thanks to everyone. Everyone who's got a mic, do you want to jump on and just say thank you to Addy and thank you to Sophie for making today possible?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Honestly,
thank you so much. It's been incredible. Honestly, there's so many, like Corey said, there's so many things that we could unpick with what you've said. There's so much content there. It's been so inspirational. And I know that everyone that's on this call has really been able to take something away, and definitely what we all needed during this time. So yeah, just thank you so much. And yeah.
Excellent. My absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. And just the best of luck to all of you guys. And as I said, you know, keep dreaming, keep going for those dreams, challenge yourselves, and never ever give up, man. Thank you. Peace out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thanks, Sophie.
No problem. Thank you so much. It's been great. Wow. And I hope to, I'm excited to listen to the podcast, guys.
Yeah, me too.
This is going to be so fun to listen back to. There was like every story, there was just multiple elements to it where it's just like, yeah, I just wanted to see where the story is going, but I had so many more questions.
I know. He was funny. He brought entertainment and lightness as well to the stories, which was brilliant. Always great to connect and hear what you guys have to say and all of the great questions that you asked. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. Honestly, it's been incredible. And yeah, fab. Oh, thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Well done. I have to say, well done. What did everyone think of that interview? Because I had to be on mute. It was like the Dane one. I was just literally in tears at one point.
Yeah, he was amazing. Oh, Josh. Go on, Joshua.
Great. He was really funny. Like, really engaging. So, like, I had loads of questions, but I just wanted to hear him talk, you know?
Yeah, I felt the same. I felt like I didn't want to stop his, like, train of thought, because everything that he came up with was, like, so much better than anything that I could have asked. So it was just like, it was like very addictive listening to him speak, because he just had so much, like, content. So I felt the same, Josh. Sorry, Imani.
Roller coaster of emotions. Like, he's really funny, and then he'll be, like, quite emotional when he's talking about his parents and things. That was amazing.
I would say I saw you very much resonating with his parents telling him to study hard at school. So I was like wondering what was running through your mind.
Literally my parents. You don't understand. I'm thinking, oh yeah, how am I going to do this? Focus on your books. Don't need to think about that. I'm just like, okay. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to do this for the weekend. Especially when you're talking about the mocks. Because you know how I had to go to cover for my mocks as well. Whereas it's like, how are you going to do your lessons and everything? They were asking me every single day, have you reorganized all of your exams? So I really like knew what he, yeah.
I felt that from you. What did you take away from the session, Jarrell?
No matter what state you're in, still try.
Wow, what an incredible discussion. I just wanted to leave this with a little bit of the feedback from the young people, because we were just in awe after speaking to you, Addy. Like, we absolutely loved what you were talking about, how you said it, and just you had us captivated the whole time. And I just really liked hearing from the young people directly how your talk, like what they thought about it immediately after your talk. So I just left it with a little bit of the reflections on the end there. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone at home who stuck it out and listened to this episode. It's a bit longer than usual, but it was just full of so much good stuff that it was like, I just thought it would be a crime to cut too much out. And there's also some bits that aren't in there. So if everyone likes it, I'm happy to release a really cool story that Adi shared with us about a celebrity that he met that left him starstruck, but I just couldn't fit it in this episode. So if you like it, subscribe, let us know, and yeah, I'll put that extra bit out as well. But just thank you everyone who made the effort to join the call, ask questions. Thank you, Addy, for talking to us. Thank you, Sophie from Audible, for arranging this. Thank you everyone that just took part and made this whole episode special, and thank you to all the listeners at home for like listening. And if anything you like about this, just let us know. We'd love to hear feedback, and if you do like it, just the best thing you can do is just tell a friend, tell your family, hit subscribe, and rate us 5 stars if you can, because it makes a big difference. We literally started this podcast while in quarantine, and we absolutely love making it, so we just want to carry on being inspired.